This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, originating from Washington, D.C. at the Take Back America Conference. Thank you, Alex Goldmark. I'm just plugged in and ready to go. My name's Peter B. Collins. I'm delighted to be sitting in for Tom Hartman today. Ordinarily, I originate from San Francisco, but we are here at the annual conference called Take Back America. This is my third year in a row. Tom Hartman would dearly love to be here today, but his travel plans to Darfur conflicted. And as I understand it, Tom is in Darfur today and will be starting to travel back to the U.S. Sometime in the next 12 or 14 hours, hoping to be back on the air with you on Wednesday. So it's my delight to be here today and tomorrow. This is a gathering of progressives from all over the country, and the buzz here is palpable. And again, since I've been here 2 years past and this is my third, I can compare them. And you can really feel, certainly fueled by the election year politics, that this is a very exciting conference. And there are certainly many Obama supporters here and many Clinton supporters here. And so far, I have seen no slime, no mudslinging. People are getting along very well. I want you to know that. And we have kind of organized chaos here in Radio Row. Lionel warmed up the seat for me here, and I'm grateful for that. My friend John Elliott is right behind us doing interviews that you'll hear late night on Air America. And so it is quite a gathering of the forces, and I'm really pleased to be here. During this hour, Carl Pope from the Sierra Club is scheduled to join us. Paige Gardner from a Women's Voices organization. I haven't met her before. Looking forward to talking with her. Filmmaker Robert Greenwald, one of our co-conspirators on many fronts, is here and very active. And also next hour, Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, a progressive Democrat from Evanston, Illinois, which is where I went to school at Northwestern. She is going to be here, and she's a fiery progressive. I'm very glad that she'll be joining us here shortly. A couple of comments first. Here in Washington, things are very busy. The president is tending to the wounds on Wall Street, trying to talk down some traders. That's figurative, by the way. They're not actually on the ledge, but things are very tough. And we've, you know, because of the global economy, when America sneezes, when Wall Street sneezes, the world risks catching a very nasty cold. And so we have a situation developing here that could spin out very quickly. The Fed has intervened, but the $2 strike price there. Hello, Shelley Pingree. Great to see you.
How are you?
The $2 price for Bear Stearns in liquidation certainly is pennies on the dollar. A lot of people are going to be hurt. Yeah. Thousands of people will be thrown out of work. And that is the second big sneeze. Last week it was the Carlyle Capital firm. And the Carlyle Group decided not to bail it out. They were leveraged 32 to 1. For every dollar in cash they had $32 of debt. And I am not an economist. I'm not an expert. But as an observer, I can tell you that this is a very serious situation. And as Speaker Pelosi has said, this administration has acted with too little, too late in so many cases. Also, we have two great Republicans visiting Iraq on the Easter recess. Dick Cheney is over there talking success and spinning a peace message. Well, not quite peacemongering. That's not in his character. But he will go from Baghdad to hold hands with King Abdullah in Saudi Arabia. Hopes to get more oil and lower prices, but we should not expect that. At least I don't think that is in the cards. And John McCain is over there working on his 100-year vision in Baghdad. Got the flak vest on, is walking around and trying to buttress his support for that war. It's all very interesting at this time. Joining me here at Radio Row right now is the Vice Chair of the Democratic National Committee, Susie Turnbull. Welcome, Susie.
Hi, Peter. Good to be with you.
Nice to see you again. Things are so placid in the Democratic Party.
Oh, yeah.
You must be sleeping in and, you know, just checking your email once or twice a day.
Well, thanks to you and people like you, I get lots of email, I can assure you, about the election. And what we're seeing is it's a lot of excitement. It's a lot of people saying, this is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
We have these great candidates, and we're not going to have a third Bush term with John McCain.
Now let's talk inside mechanics here. Florida and Michigan, serious controversies, and let me take a clear position. The rules were set before the primaries started, and rerunning elections in Florida and Michigan, to me, is changing the rules in the middle of the game. I have sympathy. It was the Republicans in Florida who moved up the election and basically challenged the DNC as it tried to discipline the states. But that process, you know, it ran its course. And I think that we have to hunker down here and stick to the rules, even if on the first ballot at the convention, Florida and Michigan don't have a vote.
Peter, I don't know exactly what's going to happen. I think that you are exactly right, that the rules are not made to be broken. Rules are made to have rules and to set up a system. And, in fact, what we're doing right now is hoping that we can that some compromises will be presented to the DNC that will allow people to feel that it was an equitable process.
Mm-hmm.
That's the number one goal. I think there's different scenarios that could take part from Michigan and Florida. I think that because the situations were different. But the bottom line is there were rules. There were rules, and there were rules there for a reason. And we always learn that breaking the rules has consequences, and I think that's the opinion of the people who are making the decision. And the people making the decision are the Rules Committee of the DNC.
Mm-hmm. And how is this going to play out? Because it seems like everybody keeps trying to avoid a decision, hoping that the primary will sort itself out, that one of the candidates will withdraw, and that this showdown will not be necessary.
Well, I think that we need to let the process to continue. We still have 8 contests between now and the beginning of June. We need those contests to go through for a number of reasons. First of all, even in the last 2 weeks, we've elected 2 new Democratic congressmen, one in Indiana replacing Julia Carson, who passed away,
mm-hmm.
by her grandson, actually,
right.
And then the other in Illinois. Now, in Illinois, we took back a seat from the Republicans. Dennis Hastert, the former Speaker of the House's seat.
The former wrestling coach.
Right. Who then Speaker of the House seat, where the Republican National Committee spent about 20% of their cash on hand. The Republican National Committee, Congressional Campaign Committee, spent about 20% to try to save that seat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in fact, contests are important because we won that seat. We won that seat. John McCain campaigned for the Republican in the mold of George Bush, and one of his guys, basically. And instead, what we got was a new Democrat who was able to cast a vote last week,
mm-hmm.
some votes last week that were very important in making decisions. What we've got just a week ago in Mississippi, we had 3 times as many Democrats casting ballots as Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Once you cast a ballot for an individual, you're engaged. You're part of the process. And I think that what we're seeing is that the more people who are going to be part of this process right now, the better, and we want that to continue.
Susie Turnbull with us here at the Take Back America Conference on the Tom Hartman Program. She's vice chair of the Democratic National Committee. And one of the things, the buzz here, is when will the infighting stop? And is Howard Dean and the DNC actively trying to broker moderation between the Clinton and Obama camps?
I mean, I think that a lot of this is self-fulfilling prophecies. I mean, I think that, in fact, the candidates understand that it is in their best interest to talk about the issues. They want to talk about Iraq. They want to talk about the economy, probably first and foremost right now, because that is such a critical issue. You just talked about it yourself. And I think that that the correction in this right now is going to come from the fact that last week was not a good week. I don't think anyone will admit it, would say that it was. But what was important,
I mean, we're now down to pastors, okay, and holding people responsible, you know, guilt by association for what a pastor said 6 or 8 or 10 years ago. And John McCain's got some pastor problems of his own.
Big problems.
But
big problems.
I don't want to go there.
Right.
Hagee, whatever his name is, he's not on the ballot.
Right. And that's exactly the case. And that who is on the ballot is, and who is going to be on the ballot is the person that is presenting a program, a plan, inspiration, solutions. That's what's going to be out there. And what the Democrats are planning to do, what we're doing as a party, is focusing on the mechanics right now to make sure that our candidate is prepared to engage in a contest. It's going to be engaging against John McCain. He is the person who would bring a third Bush term. He is a person who has said that he doesn't know much about the economy.
Yeah.
He is a person who talked about maintaining a presence in Iraq for 100 years.
He's got ethics problems.
He's got ethics problems. He's got lobbyist problems. He's got lots of problems, and what we're going to do is make sure that he's not the next president.
Susie Turnbull from the Democratic National Committee, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
Live from Washington, D.C. at the Take Back America Conference, it's the Tom Hartman Program. I'm your humble guest host, Peter B. Collins. We'll return in a moment.
Is the Tom Hartman Program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person?
We're back live at Take Back America. It's the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom as he finds his way back from Darfur. I hope you heard the live broadcast from Sudan on Friday. It's quite powerful to hear Tom Hartman and also my radio colleague Joe Madison talking vividly about the situation there and the crisis that continues. And I'm just really glad that Tom and Ellen Ratner and others took the opportunity to go there and bring that important scene to Americans. Carl Pope joins me now. He's executive director of the Sierra Club from my backyard in San Francisco. Hi, Carl.
Good to see you again.
How are you today?
Very good.
Yeah. What's the buzz here feel like for you?
Well, I just got here, but I think the buzz that's happening in America is really incredible. You're seeing unprecedented levels of engagement in this year's election. I was just at a big green jobs conference we did in Pittsburgh with United Steelworkers. We had 200 people walk in unregistered on the last day off the street, mm-hmm. wanting to learn about new green jobs and a new energy future. I think Americans are, for the first time in many, many years, finally realizing that if you don't determine the government you get the government you deserve. Yeah. And Americans don't want to get the kind of government they've had for the past 8 years.
Van Jones was one of the keynoters in this morning's kickoff. He, of course, is an activist based in Oakland. Gave a powerful, inspirational talk. And he offered a vision of a new green economy. And he talked about the needs to convert from what he calls a pollution-based system or carbon-based to a much greener approach to our energy needs. And he ticked them off. He said, you know, we need more solar in this country. That's thousands of contracts, millions of jobs. He said, we need to retrofit our buildings for better insulation. And he said, that's thousands of contracts and millions of jobs. How do we really convince the American people that combating global warming is an economic positive and not the downer that Bush and Cheney want us to believe?
Well, I think we need to make it concrete, and I'll give you one very specific example. It's very likely in the next 12 months that the federal government is going to have to intervene and try to protect the homes of 2 million American families. These are American families who can't afford to pay for the cost of their housing. If their houses go into foreclosure, we won't have a recession. We will have a depression.
Mm-hmm.
And the federal government, I think, is going to step in and try to help those people stay in their homes. Everybody's focused on the fact that their interest rates are going up. And that's one part of the problem. The other part of the problem is their utility bills are going through the roof. If we go into those homes, so we don't just negotiate a better, fairer mortgage for them, but we give them access to a government program that would insulate and retrofit their homes and cut $100, $200, $250 a month off their utility bills,
mm-hmm.
and they could then pay it back off those savings, we would probably double the size of the American construction sector.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine the kind of economic boost that would be if we had twice as many glaziers, twice as many drywall guys, twice as many insulating contractors, twice as many carpenters out there in a very focused, intense way?
Well, it'd be nice if they're Americans, too, because the construction trade has been, you know, heavily shifted in many cases to undocumented workers. They're being exploited by the construction contractors.
Well, if these were government programs, of course, you'd be paying the prevailing wage. So they'd be good-paying jobs, and they'd be fair treatment, fair conditions jobs. That's
yeah, we
right.
wouldn't use the Katrina rules. We could throw those out.
No, the Katrina rules were throw all the rules out. The Katrina rules were don't pay the prevailing wage. The Katrina rules were don't properly handle the waste products, burn them in open dumps.
Mm-hmm.
The Katrina rules were an exact model of what we shouldn't be doing.
Yeah. Carl Pope from the Sierra Club with us here on the Tom Hartman program. Carl, are these candidates green enough for you? I'm talking about the Democrats. And let's start with Obama. I think he's offered a good vision for a green economy. I'm a little troubled by his connection to Exelon, an Illinois-based company that is the largest nuclear power generator in the U.S.
Well, both Senator Obama and Senator Clinton have articulated very, very strong and positive visions, and they're both phenomenally much further down the pathway of seeing what we need to do than they were a year ago. They've been on a steep learning curve, and they've both impressed me with how they've learned. But they both have the past trying to hold them back. We have Exelon trying to hold them back. We have the coal industry trying to hold them back.
They were the sponsor of the CNN debates. Did you see that? Clean Coal and Hyundai were the sponsors on CNN of Democratic debates.
Let's be clear. The old carbon economy, the carbon complex of coal, oil, and nuclear, is not going to go gently into that good night. They're no longer competitive. They no longer meet either our energy or our national security or our public health needs. They're not going to go away. They're going to try to grab these candidates. Our plan at the Sierra Club is to capitalize on the fact that independents, that crucial voting bloc, say that a new energy future is the most important single issue for them. And we want to set a high bar, a bar so that Hillary and Obama will both understand that they need to really hold on to their vision of the future and not be pulled back by the special interests of the past.
Mm-hmm.
We think if independent voters demand that all the candidates step forward into the future, that we have a really exciting opportunity to make a real break with the past in this election.
Do environmentalists, and let me just ask you to speak for yourself in the Sierra Club, do you secretly believe that $4 a gallon gasoline is a good thing?
I actually don't believe $4 a gallon gasoline when it's going to pay the oil companies is a good thing, because what then happens is that is billions, even trillions of dollars to fund jihadism and the corruption of politics. I think that if the oil companies had to pay for what they take, if they had to operate their refineries safely, if Exxon would pay its bills in Alaska, then oil and gas might cost a little bit more, but we would use a lot less, and the bill for driving your car would go down.
Carl Pope from the Sierra Club, thank you very much.
Thanks,
great to
Tom
see
Hartman.
You.
Thanks.
All right. I'm actually Peter B. Collins, and this is the Tom Hartman Program.
Sorry, Peter.
You
bye-bye.
Got it.
We'll be back.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Back live at the Take Back America Conference in Washington, D.C. You're tuned to the Tom Hartman Program on Air America. And I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom today and tomorrow from this exciting, buzz-filled conference. And I'm here on Radio Row. Filmmaker Robert Greenwald, who will join us coming up in the next segment, is warming up right now with a Los Angeles radio show. And Rob Call from opednews.com just strolled by over to the blogger section right behind us. And they are so damn noisy. Those bloggers, clack, 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 clack. I want to open up the phone lines here. You can join me right now on the phone at 866-303-2270, 866-303-2270. Here at Radio Row, some things happen like clockwork, and at the moment, that's not happening. Paige Gardner is scheduled to join us, and they're looking for her in this gathering, the throngs of people. And it's a very interesting scene here, because there is, I would say, some tension between the Obama and Clinton camps. Here it is, St. Patrick's Day, and of course, I'm Irish every day, but I'm wearing the green, and we have a lot of people who are observing that. I've seen several O-apostrophe-B-A-M-A, Obama buttons. I haven't seen any Irishification, Gaelicizing. You can tell I'm stretching here looking for words. But I haven't seen any treatments of Hillary Clinton or Hillary O'Rodham Clinton, Mac Rodham, anything like that. So there is the buzz, there is the tension, and that's just one of the things that I can report to you here from the Take Back America conference. One of the great progressive activists, Jim Dean, joins us right now from Democracy for America. Jim, how are you today?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for stepping in. Really appreciate it. And this morning at the opening keynotes, we heard Donna Edwards speak. And it was really gratifying because the last 2 years she has been here working on campaigns. 2 years ago she ran and came close to defeating incumbent Al Wynn. And this year she did it by a significant margin. And DFA and many other progressive groups were very active in that campaign.
Yeah, it was really a great victory. I mean, we really need more Donna Edwards. We need in Congress, and we need more people like her in Congress. Really accomplished citizen activists. That's really the key to me to making sure that every American's going to have health care and that we're going to bring the troops home from Iraq and a lot of other stuff. A lot of our members worked very, very hard in our race. One of them was actually running her Montgomery County operation, and really a lot of folks, really boots on the ground. And, you know, that's what makes the world go round with us, talking to voters and getting them out there.
Don Edwards made an interesting confession now that she's safely won the primary and has a pretty easy ride to the general election. She was talking about her past and her progressive credentials, and she said, oh, by the way, I worked for a while for the Lockheed Corporation. And there was a gasp in the room, and then she explained, well, but it was on projects at the Goddard Space Center. And she said, I know a little bit about rocket science. And then we saw the setup. And she said, getting out of Iraq is not rocket science.
Right on, right on. God bless her for that. I mean, listen, you know, the days of sort of saying, I like this candidate, and I'm going to vote for them, and they're going to go off to Congress and do what we like or want, are over. We've got to have and be involved with this thing every step of the way. We've got to have Donna's back when she goes to Congress, just as we need to have Jerry McNerney's back and Carol Shea Porter's back and a lot of other new progressive people that are not only getting into Congress but at all levels of office. And that's really what we're about. It's about citizen activism. It's about taking responsibility over the political process. And she's proven that everybody can do it. And she's just tremendous. I really have high hopes for her.
And Bob Borisage, the founder of this effort, the Campaign for America's Future and the Take Back America Conference, made a very important point in his opening remarks today. He said that we cannot let up. Even if we have Democratic victories in November and take, you know, a bigger margin in the House, even a 60-vote margin in the Senate and the White House. He said as progressives, and he identified himself as somewhat separate from the Democratic Party, saying that we will have to keep the pressure on every day to counter the Republicans, to counter the influence of the lobby groups and the entrenched corporate interests. And I think that's a very important note, that this is not just about gearing up from here to November. This is a long march to restore America.
You know, Bob Borisage is absolutely right, Peter. We have to be in this fight. You know, I always look at the biggest fault line in politics is between a culture of activism and a culture of incumbency. And in Congress or any state capital or any city council chamber, you have that culture of incumbency. And that's why things don't get done. That's why people haven't gotten the political courage to start, you know, funding the war in Iraq, to really do something about single-payer health plan, health care. So, you know, if we're going to get this, make this happen, and after all, this is what this is about. It's not just about the candidates. It's about getting this stuff done, balancing the budget, for God's sakes. We're going to have to be in there and have these people's back and encourage them. Otherwise, they just go to Washington, and the next thing they know, they're hanging out with people from K Street. You know, we need to be their support network all the way through this, and we need to be helping them fight for these battles. And I know Donna has got it, and she's got the courage to do it, but we need to be there for her.
We're talking with Jim Dean from Democracy for America here on the Tom Hartman program. And, Jim, how many clones of Donna Edwards are you working on? And I don't mean that in a in a dismissive way. But we need people like her. Her profile is fascinating. An African-American woman who's been an activist outside government, and now she said, you know, she's on her way to the inside. Well, we need people with that experience and with that perspective. And tell me what you're seeing around the country. There are almost 30 Republican seats that are going to be vacated this year, which is a real invitation to increasing that House majority.
Well, that's certainly true. And, you know, certainly we're very invested in Charlie Brown's race for Congress. Look, if you want national security, you need a guy like Charlie Brown in. He knows we need to get out of Iraq.
But and for listeners who might not know, Charlie Brown is running for the second time, like Edwards, like Jerry McNerney in defeating Pombo in California. Charlie Brown is a retired Air Force colonel, I believe.
That's correct.
And he challenged John Doolittle, an Abramoff Republican, last time, and now Doolittle has retired to spend more time with his defense attorney. And the problem is that the Republicans in California have carpetbagged in a very popular hardline conservative in a very red district, Tom McClintock.
Yeah, they're,
and
they're,
so this is where I want to make a special appeal, Jim.
Yeah.
The DCCC, that's the official Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. My bet is that they won't put much money behind Charlie Brown. They're going to say, sorry, Charlie, you got a real ogre, a real elephant in this race, and we got to put our money behind the people who are really going to win. And I want to see people like PDA and DFA in there saying, Charlie, we're going to stay with you all the way and defeat this conservative carpetbagger.
Well, we are certainly and have been committed to this for some time. We helped him in his race in 2006. We've been in the, he won our grassroots all, first grassroots all-star campaign for this cycle, 2008. So we've been raising money for him. Our groups in Sacramento, Stockton area, near his and in his district, very much behind him. He's now is you're right. It's a Northern California congressional race, and the Republicans have put up somebody from Los Angeles to run in it, which is interesting. But the point of the matter is if you want to talk to somebody about how to real national security, Charlie Brown knows it, and he knows the key to it is getting out of Iraq. But also he knows about all the corruption that's been going on in our military contracting and everything else, the corruption that went on in this war in Iraq. This is the kind of guy, citizen activist, his wife was in the Air Force for 20-plus years,
right.
Son in Iraq right now. This is the kind of guy we need in Congress. Rick Noriega, also a veteran, running for Senate in Texas. Somebody very, very important to have him in there. He's running against John Cornyn, who, as you know, is ridiculous. He represents another chance, opportunity for us to bring in that outside thinking that we need to not just end the war in Iraq, but also, again, to do something about these tough issues like health care, like Social Security, education, global warming. Citizen perspectives, I always feel that they're, frankly, ahead of the career politicians on this, and you have some very, very good people out there that are running, and even for the local offices, it's very important to get them in there.
We're talking to Jim Dean, Democracy for America, their website, democracyforamerica.com. Check it out. There are a lot of interesting workshops. You still doing these? We talked about the one in Berkeley a few weeks ago.
Yep, we did one in Berkeley. Then we went to Birmingham, Alabama. Last week we were just in Texas. And if you go to our website, democracyforamerica.com, we've got another 17 trainings scheduled between now and the convention. We'll have some more afterwards. So if you're one of those folks that are getting engaged in politics, you can sign up right there for one of these trainings. We also have a night school program, which we're going to start in about a month, which you can do out of the comfort of your own home, about how to organize, how to do precinct organizing, how to take back the media, how to do a lot of things that you have to do to either advocate for your issues or run for office and anything in between. So a good way to get involved in politics.
And, Jim, what is your take on what we need to do to keep progressives in the Democratic fold through November? There's a lot of infighting. And we saw the exit polls last week that show that things are really hardening, where there are Clinton voters who say, I couldn't vote for Obama, and there are Obama voters who say they couldn't vote for Clinton. And this is playing out in a way that I'm concerned about, because if we have to wait for the convention for the nominee to be selected to be identified, that means it's a very short time to heal those wounds, raise money, have a unified message between the end of the convention and the November election.
Well, I have a sort of a different perspective. The number that I've really focused on is the 50% of the voters who have said that they would be happy with either candidate. Yes, this is a competitive race. Yes, the hardcore supporters are going at it pretty hard, and we expect that in a primary like this. But that is a small price to pay for the amount of new energy and new people that are getting involved right now. And our job is really to capture those folks and empower them to take control and responsibility over the political process. Tough to do, but we've got to do it. And I think if we do, the party that empowers will be the party that's in power for a long time.
All right. Jim Dean, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us today. I want people to go to your website, democracyforamerica.com.
Hey, Peter. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Great to see you.
Appreciate it.
More live from Washington, D.C. I'm Peter B. Collins here on the Tom Hartman Program on Air America.
Tom Hartman. Speaking the truth that multinational corporations don't want you to know. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers of SEIU 1199. Fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege.
Thank you, Tom Hartman. I'm sitting in for Tom, Peter B. Collins, live from Take Back America in Washington, D.C. Tom is about to start a grueling and arduous trip back from Sudan, from Darfur, and expects to be back on the air Wednesday here on Air America. I'll be holding down the seat here today and tomorrow at this very exciting conference in Washington, D.C., loaded with progressive activists, and one of them joins me now, filmmaker Robert Greenwald from Brave New Films. Hello, Robert.
Hi.
Always a pleasure to see you.
Same here.
Thanks for agitating nonstop.
Nice. It's a fun job, and somebody's got to do it.
Well, you're doing great work there. And if people haven't, they got to visit bravenewfilms.org, because on almost a daily basis, you're putting up new content.
Well, we've got an amazing group of dedicated folks at Brave New Films, and there are lots of stories to tell, and there's no question about the impact of video. So whether it's our Fox attacks or the anti-war stuff or the stuff about McCain, we're seeing over and over again that not only do people watch it, but most importantly, they then pass it around. We just passed, by the way, 14 million views on our short video pieces, thanks to help of you and your listeners. Because, you know, I got tired of being angry every day or throwing a shoe at the television set. And these really are tools. So you can use them. You hit forward. It's very easy. You send it on to your friends or neighbors or people you work with and say, hey, look, here's what McCain is really saying, or here's how Fox is distorting the news, or did you know that the Iraq War has cost your family $16,000? Forget about whether you're, you know, right, left, Republican, or Democrat.
Mm-hmm. Another great Robert Dreyfus, just published a piece in The Nation magazine, which really gives you an honest view of John McCain from the perspective of his Republican colleagues. And I don't believe he really tried to take a page from you. But this is something I credit you for, going back to Uncounted and some of your other full-length documentary films, where you have offered critiques, not from, you know, Noam Chomsky or, you know, notorious lefties like me. Somebody labeled me that recently.
Congratulations.
But from the people, Dreyfus cites Thad Cochran, mm-hmm. who says, you know, that John McCain is unstable, he's got a bad temper, he's got a bad temperament, he doesn't play well with others, and then the next day he endorsed him for president.
Yeah, perfect with politics. Well, you know, we have found that with different films and different videos, we did a series about Rudy Giuliani, the real Rudy. We had firemen, policemen, people from Giuliani's administration who had worked with him and had voted for him that said, this is a tragedy that this man is running on his 9/11 record. And I think it really had an impact over time. People
and you helped, pardon me, you helped create a greater tragedy, $59 million and one delegate for Rudy. That goes into the record books, doesn't it?
You would think people would ask for their money back, but it doesn't seem to work that way.
I guess not. Now, Robert, one of the things that I got in my swag bag here at Take Back America is a DVD updated of Outfoxed. Talk a little bit about the origins of Outfoxed. You got volunteers who monitored their news channel. Did you have to give them Dramamine or anything else to get them through it all?
Well, when we were making the movie Outfoxed, we had these amazing women all around the country who watched over and over again, and I would send them email alerts. Look for Kerry is French, or look for Some People Say. All of these are sections in the Outfoxed movie, for those of you who haven't seen it. And then these women would be watching, and they would find it, and they would send us the date and time, and we would make sure that we got it included in the film. What we've done since then with these Fox attacks, which are available at bravenewfilms.org, the Fox attacks are updates. So we did a whole piece how Fox attacks the environment, how Fox attacks women, Fox attacks Black America, Fox attacks Obama. Over and over again, only now we don't have to wait years. We do it quickly, we do it instantly, and people can not only pass it around, they can make a phone call, they can sign a petition. We really got O'Reilly on the homeless veterans when
sure
he said
did.
There were no homeless veterans.
Yeah.
And we had them appear and try to present the petition with 20,000 names, and they were turned away. So, again, there are actions that people can do. We don't need to just be angry, and we certainly don't need to be hopeless.
Are you working on Karl Rove? He's now a Fox News commentator. And Howard Kurtz, who appears to be a see-no-evil media critic, did a real puff piece on him in the Washington Post today, not acknowledging some of the real partisan comments that he's made and making him out to be this new diplomat. It really caused me to scratch my bald head.
Mine too. When it comes to Rove, when it comes to Fox, it's no surprise because they are together. They are married at the hip, or I defy you to tell one from the other. The problem really, and we show this in the new piece, and this is actually quite serious, is the mainstream media continues to pick up stories that begin at Fox News. And we show it very categorically, the Farrakhan story, and then you see Tim Russert word for word saying things that have come from Fox News. And that's why it's important that people see it, that they pass it around, that they make phone calls, they sign the petitions, because we know what's coming. We've seen it before, and we know that Fox will affect the other media, and that's their real evilness.
Well, and we're now getting the pastor's soundbite, and they do not take apart the ravings of John Hagee, and maybe he says Hagee, I don't know the guy, but I've read what he says out of the pulpit, and it's roughly comparable in terms of inflammatory or offensive commentary to the uninitiated, and yet we're seeing the retired pastor from Obama's church being featured on CNN and Fox News almost every 20 minutes now with a statement that he made that was about the immorality of the Iraq war. Mm-hmm. And he used the phrase, God damn America. And in context, I agree with the pastor. But when it is excised, it's a very inconvenient and inflammatory soundbite. And I didn't think he was on the ticket. He's not like running for VP or anything, is he?
Gee, that's a good point. We have to ask about that. No, it's here is where, again, they're very effective. They took the story, and you'll see it even in Fox Attacks Obama from a year ago. Hannity has been talking about this pastor for over a year. He doesn't let the story go, and we've got to be clear and articulate and tough about their distortions and their constant propaganda.
Robert Greenwald, BraveNewFilms.org. I'm Peter D.
Hartman. Uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is the Tom Hartman Program. The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
We continue on the Tom Hartman Program live from Take Back America, the Progressive Conference in Washington, D.C. Sitting in for Tom today and tomorrow, I'm Peter B. Collins from San Francisco. And if you're asking who's he and where did he come from, visit my website at peterbcollins.com, and there's some stories there that might help you. Coming up this hour, Ron Pollack from Families USA is scheduled to join us. And we're also going to talk to Billy Wimsatt of a young voters group. They used to be called the League of Pissed Off Voters, and that pissed too many people off. So now they're just the League of Young Voters. But they have been active since 2006. And we are seeing an influx of young voters participate in this year's political process, and I personally am quite delighted by that. If you want to join the conversation, we got all our gizmos hooked up now, and we can take your phone calls, 866-303-2270. Jan Schakowsky is a Democratic congresswoman from the North Shore of Chicago, where I went to school at Northwestern, and she joins us here at Take Back America. Congresswoman?
Thanks. Thanks so much, Peter, for having me here.
Well, it's great to see you again, and I appreciate the hard work you've been doing. I rank you up with Barbara Lee, Maxine Waters, and Lynn Woolsey from my home state of California in really tirelessly fighting for the issues that we thought we gave you a mandate for in the 2006 midterms. Bob Borisaj referred to that this morning in his opening comments, and he said, you know, it's one thing to accept it when you lose. He said, but when you win an election but do not get the results you want, it's like winning and then losing. And there are many people who are disappointed by the progress to date. Now, let me take a bright note to start off with. I am thrilled that the House has stood firm on FISA reform, has not caved in either to the bill from the Senate or the constant harping from the White House that is intended to obscure forever the extent of this wiretapping that was conducted illegally and started before 9/11. And we've heard the comments from the president using fear and intimidation, even trotting out trial lawyers as a reason why people should cave in on this. And the House has not done that. I am so pleased.
Well, first of all, I'm happy to be in the good company of members that you said. On the other hand, I do want to say that the Democratic leadership, particularly in the Democratic majority in the House of Representatives, has passed a number of really important improvements in energy, in raising the minimum wage, and a lot of things that make a difference in people's lives. So, I don't want to make excuses for not being firmer, as many people wanted us to, but I think we have made progress. FISA is definitely one of them. That's the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. The president, look, I'm on the Intelligence Committee, and it is clear to me that this administration and this president believes he can do anything. I underscore anything. That it is within their right and their power. They don't have to ask permission. And in this instance, what they did was go to the telephone companies. This is probably where the real illegality may step in. I say may because I think that still needs to be affirmed. But and tells them to hand over our private information. Now, you would have thought from the floor debate the Republicans were talking about the phone companies as good Samaritans, as heroes, American patriotic heroes for turning over that information. I don't think most Americans think about the telephone company as good Samaritans. Mm-hmm. I mean, not only are they giving us these high bills, but now they're taking away our civil liberties. No. And the House said a very strong no, mm-hmm. that we're not going to give them blanket immunity for responding with turning over all our stuff to the president and the administration.
Yeah. We're talking with Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, a Democrat from the Chicago area. If you want to join us, toll free, it's 866-303-2270, 866-303-2270. This week, a lot going on. And it is the fifth anniversary of a dubious moment in American history, Bush's invasion of Iraq. One flyer I got is activists will be putting crime scene tape around the White House this Wednesday. Now, the demonstrations have disappointed me. I'd love to see millions of people of every kind in the streets really, galvanized and drawing attention to this. And so I want to be clear that the American people deserve some responsibility for tolerating the conditions that we have. And many of them are falsely believing the representations of the Bush administration. Dick Cheney, live from Baghdad, was spinning it again today, that the surge has worked, that things are improving, that this Maliki government is going to survive and thrive. And we know that this is not true.
Well, actually, General Petraeus said it was not true, that he was gravely disappointed with the lack of progress by the Iraqis.
Mm-hmm. And so what are your thoughts about during this election year? It appears to me that the Democratic leadership has said we can't get anywhere by trying to stop the president, by trying to block the funding bills. And I think we should continue to throw every possible monkey wrench into the system to get the message across that the American people want this war ended.
Well, first of all, I think that a lot of the attention is now on the presidential candidates, and we need to support them. Full disclosure, I'm a national co-chair of the Barack Obama for mm-hmm. President campaign. Both of them have talked about getting out of the war. Only one of them said not to get into the war. Of course, that's Obama. So I think we need to both have an inside and an outside strategy. We need to be organizing for the present, but also building for the future. And I think one of the things that's really starting to resonate is the fact that this war is costing $13 million an hour, about 10, 11, maybe $12 billion a month. And so what does that mean to ordinary Americans? It means that we can't have the health care we want or the educational systems we want, and we can't repair our roads, and we can't even have homeland security that we need because of this. And our veterans can't get what they need. The president's budget calls for $18 billion in cuts for our veterans. Can you imagine? And so I think beginning to connect the war to people's lives and their priorities is resonating and is something that we continually need to push. But I am a strong believer that even as we move forward with our budgets, with all these discussions, that we have to talk about cutting the funding, bringing our troops home, and that's certainly where I'm at.
A year ago, Chairman Obie of Appropriations was saying he didn't want to originate any more bills to pay for Iraq. When the president made the $95 billion request in the fall, he said, I won't give all the money to him. But the Democrats, pardon me, really keep caving in the end. And I'm not blaming you, because I know how you vote. But how do we change this? How do we really get Democrats to recognize that it's good policy and good politics to end this war now?
Well, one of the things is we have to keep talking about it. I mean, the fact that it's disappeared from the front page of the newspapers equates to the attention that even the American people pay to it.
And to his credit, Senator Obama continues to introduce the topic and bring up his position, even though his pollsters are probably telling him that the economy is more top of mind.
Yeah, that's why I say we need to connect the two. As the economy rises, don't you think more and more people are going to be saying, well, why is it that we're throwing money at Bear Stearns? Mm-hmm. There's no money to bail out homeowners who have losing their homes, and yet there's plenty of money to keep going to, you know, sending to Iraq into this ridiculous war, this purposeless war. And at the same time, too, Barack always points out that Afghanistan and other places in the world are erupting. You know, I go to hot spots briefings in the Intelligence Committee. I mean, mm-hmm. There are so many of them around the world. We keep funding this war, which only exacerbates our worldwide problems.
I'm worried about Turkey's intervention into Iraq. I'm worried about the situation in Pakistan, and that gets very little play. It all got spitzered off the news last week. Let's go to Lucy in San Jose. Lucy, welcome to Air America, the Tom Hartman program. I'm Peter B. Collins with Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky. Lucy, go right ahead.
Hi, thanks. Good morning, you guys. Thank you so much for what you're doing. It's such a thrill.
Thank you. We have limited time, so go right ahead.
Okay, for Ms. Schakowsky, I also know how she votes, and I respect her greatly, but I want to ask a question about impeachment. And, you know, the Democrat, she was just talking about how much the Dems are getting done. And that's the basis for their refusal to impeach a president who has committed massive violations of his oath of office, war crimes, and illegal war that's sucking the life out of this country, not to mention what it's done to Iraq and Afghanistan. And I want to know, Ms. Schakowsky, from you, of course, we know it takes two bodies to pass legislation, and it takes a
Lucy,
president.
Lucy, we've got your question. We've got limited time. Go ahead, Congresswoman.
I'm going to give you a very practical answer, Lucy. Imagine what a campaign for impeachment looks like. Who's the target? Only Democrats are the target. And that means that while we're running a presidential race against John McCain, we should be targeting the Republicans, whose war this is, John McCain, George Bush, not the Democrats.
Jan Schakowsky, Congresswoman from the North Shore of Chicago, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman. Uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Live from Washington, D.C., the Tom Hartman Program continues, and I remain Peter B. Collins, happy to be sitting in for Tom today. Lots of excitement here at this progressive conference, and you can log on to ourfuture.org. That is the website of the Campaign for America's Future, the sponsor of this event that occurs every year in Washington. Joining me now is Stuart Acuff, Director of Organizing for the AFL-CIO. Welcome, Stuart.
Thank you, Peter. It's great to be with you. Great to be here at Take Back America. It's a wonderful conference.
Well, it really is. And give me your view of labor's role in the election process and the primaries to date. What do you see that labor has done to activate the grassroots and get activists to the caucuses in some of those states?
Well, a lot, especially if you go back 2 years to the 2006 elections, where labor was really active, where we pushed economic issues into the whole mix and made the election about economic issues as well as the occupation in Iraq. And now unions are on, we were divided between three Democratic candidates, John Edwards, Barack Obama, and Hillary Clinton. And so unions are moving their base, educating their members. We just started last week trying to make sure that working people, both union and non-union in America, know the real story on John McCain, the real McCain, the Straight Talk Express that, you know, lost a couple of its wheels on the way to the election.
Amen. Yeah.
And so that workers know who he is economically. And he's not a friend of the middle class, and he's not a friend of workers. And then when this the primaries are over and when we have a candidate on the Democratic side, all of organized labor will come together behind that candidate, make sure that economic issues are driven into the heart of the campaign, at the core of the campaign. What I mean, good jobs, fair trade, universal health care, and the right to organize unions and bargain collectively.
Now, so far in the campaign, it appears that NAFTA has really been kind of the limit to debate about labor issues, about things that matter to organized labor. There certainly has been talk about building a green economy and things of that nature, and I certainly support that. But do you feel that the core issues of labor, including the right to organize, are being addressed by Clinton and Obama?
They are, and we would like, we obviously want to see them addressed more, but all the candidates on the Democratic side for president endorse the Employee Free Choice Act, which will restore the right to organize and bargain collectively. All endorse universal health care. There are differences in everybody's plan, but those differences are going to have to be worked out in the legislative process anyway. And you're right, we need a bigger discussion on trade, because the way trade has been organized up to now for the last 20 years has been to benefit the elites at the expense of workers and the environment. We've got to reverse that. We can reverse that. All you got to do is look at Europe and see how they engineer trade in Europe or how they negotiate trade in Europe to lift up the Portugals instead of pulling down the Swedes.
Mm-hmm.
And we can do that as well. And I do think that we've made progress in the last 10 years or so in the Democratic Party of explaining why trade is important to workers here and abroad. And the way trade has been organized up to now has served to drive the global economic race to the bottom and impoverish workers here and around the world. But we need to continue to lift that up.
We're talking with Stuart Acuff from the AFL-CIO here on the Tom Hartman Program, live from Washington, D.C. Now, the news from Wall Street is pretty dire.
Yes.
Last week, the Carlyle Group, linked to President Bush's father, failed to do a margin call and bail out one of their funds and just let it go right down the toilet. Bear Stearns imploded in a four-day period, and the Fed met over the weekend in the middle of the night to bail them out.
Right.
But we don't see bailouts like that aimed at American workers.
No, we don't.
And
compare that to the foreclosure crisis, the mortgage crisis
in
America.
Well, and that is being driven in part by the fortunes of these banks.
That's
and,
right.
And, of course, the message out of the White House is that it's the fault of workers and others who overextended themselves.
Right.
But we know that there was a lot of predatory lending and that the people who pocketed the commissions from writing loans to people who weren't qualified are not going to give that money back.
That's right.
So what is your sense of how we fix this in the interests of working families in America?
Well, we need an immediate economic stimulus. We need an immediate stop to all foreclosures. We need an immediate stop to all foreclosures. And then we need a high-level strategy to figure out how to make this work for working families, how to stop putting people and families out of their homes, how to help people hold on to their homes. But it's even more fundamental than that, Peter, because the real foundation of this crisis is that for 30 years we have delinked and decoupled wages from productivity.
Mm-hmm.
Because we took away the right to organize and form unions. And there's not enough spending power, buying power, at the bottom of the economy. That's the long-term strategy. Let workers organize unions. Let them bargain collectively. We'll build the middle class, and we'll solve the weakness in this economy.
Stuart Acuff, a real pleasure to meet you, and you're a real labor guy. You're from a right-to-work-for-less state, Georgia.
I am.
Thank
I am
you, Stuart.
Indeed.
From Washington, I'm Peter B. Collins on the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
It's the Tom Hartman Program, live from Washington, D.C. This is Peter B. Collins, proud to be sitting in for Tom today and tomorrow. There's Medea Benjamin from Code Pink. She's out of jail. Hello, Medea. Great to see you. See, all kinds of progressives gather here, and it's just terrific. We're live from Radio Row, and in this next segment, we're going to talk about the role of young voters in this year's politics. And I want to open up the phone lines here at Air America and invite people, I don't care your age, but if you think young and you're nominally 30 or less, I'd like you to participate in this segment. Lines are open for you, toll-free, at 866-303-2270, 866-303-2270. A few years back, I was invited to a meeting in San Francisco at somebody's apartment, and I was there with Drummond Pike, who is the executive director of the Tides Foundation, a progressive foundation based in San Francisco. And we brought the average age of the group up to about 26.
Yeah.
It was an organizing meeting of a group known at that time as the League of Pissed Off Voters. And I believe that while some critics and some media people, mostly right-wingers, say that anger doesn't work in politics and that anger is inappropriate in televised debates, there's a lot to be angry about in this country and in view of our politics. Vico Baker is the new executive director of the sanitized and renamed League of Young Voters. Welcome, Vico.
How are you doing? Thank you.
Not bad. Are you still pissed off?
Very pissed off, but we're just a little bit more strategic and a little bit more energized and a little bit more focused on making change.
Yeah.
But we're still very much pissed off.
Uh-huh. And there's a lot of work to do because, in general, people believe that young people are much more involved in politics. And I don't want to discourage anybody or put a sour note on it, but I would just say that there are a lot of young people who remain disconnected.
That's right.
And efforts have been made. We saw some significant gains in 2006 in participation by people under the age of 30. And this year, in spots, we are seeing greater activism, greater participation, and in many cases, but not all, greater turnout at the polls from younger people. What is your assessment of the state of youth activism here in 2008, Vico?
Yeah, if you look at what happened on Super Tuesday, one in four college graduates, young voters who had some type of college, went and turned out to the polls. If you look at non-college graduates, one in 14 young folks didn't. One in 14 folks showed up.
Yeah.
So there's a big gap. We're excited about what the energy that's going on in the Progressive and the Democratic Party, but we have a lot of work to do. That we're making sure that the people that are most disenfranchised in this country get to the polls.
And are those people who've given up? They simply don't think that the system means anything to them, and they may have been marginalized in other ways, in school and in job seeking and you know, other practical aspects of life.
Yeah, very much so. But there's two things. One, Circle just came out with a report that said part of it is that disenfranchised folks aren't in the practice of the civic process. You know, they go to schools that don't teach folks how to go vote. That's one thing. But the second thing is, if you look at the way these campaigns are sort of targeting folks, MySpace, Facebook, there's very much a digital divide that occurs in this country. And the truth of the matter is the campaigns aren't spending the money to get the young folks out. And that's what we do with the League of Young Voters. We go where nobody else is going to go, and we get them to turn out. Where I worked in Milwaukee in 06, we turned out increased turnout percentages 50 to 60% from the last gubernatorial election.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of techniques do you use to engage these non-college voters who haven't been participating?
Yeah, the number one way that we do it is by peer-to-peer outreach and peer-to-peer networking. We spend a lot of time doing leadership development. We spend a lot of time working with young people so they know and understand the process. Once we have these empowered leaders, we send them back using the tools that they would use every day, MySpace, Facebook, radio ads, glossy hip-hop flyers. We're in the clubs, we're in the barbershops, we're on the basketball courts. But if we don't encourage and develop leadership development in these communities, they're never going to change.
Yeah. Text messaging big?
Text messaging is huge. I mean, there's all these reports that say it's one of the easiest ways to increase turnout amongst young people.
Mm-hmm. Let's take some calls here. Mike's in New York, and Mike, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins, and we're talking with Biko Baker.
Hi, how you doing? I'm actually a big Brock supporter. We've been organizing people from New York here to travel down to PA and do some canvassing for them. A lot of young people were turning out. We had 24 people go down this Saturday and do some canvassing for them. A lot of energy. I think when you look at the two candidates, I think Barack Obama definitely had the biggest appeal to the younger voters with his message of, you know, it's time to stop the cynicism and get to work on what really needs to be fixed in this country and get more people to be engaged in the process.
And Biko, what about that? Is the Obama message really connecting with younger people? I mean, certainly the college-educated, as you described, yes. But do average people have that same reaction?
I mean, I think Barack and Hillary and everything that's going on in this election is legendary and historic, and people are excited about it. But the truth of the matter is that, the Barack Obama campaign isn't going into the hoods as much as other folks would like them to. They aren't going and knocking the doors in the lowest income wards, and that's just a practice that most campaigns do. Mm-hmm. I saw Barack Obama speak in 2007, right after the Virginia Tech homicides. And he spoke a lot about violence. He came to Milwaukee, was there. He stopped with his stump speech, said, we're not going to talk about our usually stump speech. We're going to talk about what happened yesterday at Virginia Tech. And the people I was with, young African Americans from the inner city, were excited about it. They had never heard anybody talk about that. He hasn't talked about that a lot in this election. This year, over 50,000 people will die from homicide or suicide. That's way more than the amount of people that died in Iraq, mm-hmm. American lives. We mm-hmm. have to start talking about these issues because these are what young people in inner city America are concerned about.
Mike, thank you for your call. Now let's go to Brandon in the East Bay listening on one of my favorite radio stations, Green 960 in San Francisco. Go ahead, Brandon.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. Obama supporter, first-time caller. And I've been active for the past couple of years, but what scares me is the secretive lives that politicians lead nowadays. The media coverage, they don't cover certain things, and that's what probably bothers me the most.
Give me an example.
Hillary's linked to Freemasonry, and Bill being a 33-degree mathematician, and just other things that link up that you can. There's so much information on the internet nowadays that people have access to.
Uh-huh.
Not saying that everything's true, but at the same time, you know, you see people sitting there with Masonic pins and little garments and stuff, and they don't talk. They only talk about five major issues that go on nowadays, and I think there's a lot more issues out there that people need to be aware of.
Okay. Well, Brandon, I mean, for me, their links to Freemasons are not very important. You may think that's significant, but honestly, my concerns are Hillary's policies and the way they have conducted the campaign. And I think that those, you know, present much bigger challenges and important things that we need to address, frankly, than Barack's pastor or any connection by the Clintons to Freemasonry. But thank you for the call today. Now to John in San Francisco as well. John, welcome to the program. I'm Peter B., sitting in for Tom Hartman today.
Yes, I think there's a problem with all three of the candidates. I think people pretty well know that McCain is a mad dog warmonger. Hillary has voted for this war and all of the appropriations, the hundreds of billions of dollars. But so has Obama. And I was just reading on WSWS.org about what the Wall Street Journal, this ultra-right Wall Street Journal, featured a half-page defense of Obama's foreign policy by the ultra-right Martin Peretz of the New Republic. And he has said that Obama is a patriot of the old cadence and old convictions, and if he is elected president, he will disappoint his supporters and surprise his detractors. And I think he's referring to the fact that all of the major Democrats, not the ones that have been banned and eliminated like Gravel and Kucinich, mm-hmm. have supported every one of the appropriations, the hundreds of billions of dollars for this war, and people like and I think it's dangerous for young people to think that if Obama takes us to war, for instance, against Pakistan, where he's talked for, about striking Pakistan even without that country's government, something that Bush hasn't even said, it's even more.
Wait a minute, John. First of all, what Obama did was answer a hypothetical question about whether he would launch an attack against Osama bin Laden in the wild Waziristan lands, provinces of Pakistan, if the central government of Pakistan did not cooperate. And he said he would. And this is something the Bush administration did about 3 weeks ago, and barely any criticism surfaced from anywhere, including most Democrats.
Yes,
so,
that's the problem, I believe. If people are going to accept the same kinds of policies from an Obama because he's young and cool, I think it's even more dangerous. This is my point.
Well, frankly, John, in the big scheme of things, a strategic attack on Al-Qaeda's leadership in the wilds of Pakistan is much preferable to deploying U.S. troops for 5 years in Iraq at the level of 160,000 in uniform and another 180,000 in contractors.
Or. I think he has not called for withdrawing the troops. He's called for redeploying them, renaming them as counterterrorism troops, and keeping fast reaction troops there. This is the same imperialist policy of dominating the world, except maybe redistributing the troops a little bit more, bombing more people from the air.
John, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Biko, just about 30 seconds remaining. What's your website, and how can young people get involved with the League of Young Voters?
You can hit us at theleague.com. If you're interested in training or learning how to get young people in your communities out, you can go to the youngvoter.org, and we'll come to your city, set up our training, and we're going to encourage everybody to get out to the polls in November.
Biko Baker, Executive Director of the League of Young Voters. Thank you very much. Good
Thank
to
you.
Talk to you. I'm Peter B. Collins, live from Washington, D.C., on the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman, helping you win the water cooler wars. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege.
That's the voice of Tom Hartman. He'll return on Wednesday. Here behind the microphone, I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom as he wends his way back from Darfur. I think he starts to travel about 12 hours from now, and I hope it all goes smoothly for him. And what you heard him say on behalf of healthcare workers all across America is that healthcare should be a right and not a privilege. And I think that's a part of the mission statement at Families USA here in Washington, D.C., a think tank and activist group. Ron Pollack is their founding executive director. Ron, how are you today?
I'm doing real well. Good to talk to you again.
It's always good to talk with you, sir. And I'm wondering if you are content with the level of debate about health care in the presidential campaigns. I, for one, was frustrated that it got distracted into arguments over the fine print about mandates. And it seems that we've kind of put that aside. I don't know if it's completely behind us. But do you think that in the debates, particularly the more recent one-on-one debates between Clinton and Obama, that Americans have gotten a better sense of what their proposals are?
Well, I must say I'm encouraged that both Senators Obama and Clinton are making health care reform a top domestic priority. They both are clear about trying to achieve the goal that's designed to make sure that health coverage is available, affordable for everybody. And I think, by and large, much of what they have in their two plans is very similar to one another. You know, unfortunately, as often occurs, when you've got two candidates whose positions are fairly close to one another, and you wind up getting off on some element, you know, because everyone tries to distinguish one from the other. But I have to say, if you look at the proposals as a whole, those proposals are very similar to one another, and they would move us very much in the right direction.
And do you want to take a quick position on mandates? My feeling is that these are proposals, and that really focusing on the rather minor differences is kind of a waste of time, because we know ultimately that it's going to take a lot of hard work to turn these proposals into legislation, and many compromises and changes may occur between now and then.
Well, you're right. There are going to undoubtedly be compromises between now and when Congress seriously gets to work on something like this. You know, remember, it's always easier to stop something than it is to pass something, because anything that's controversial is going to require 60 votes in the Senate to, you know, to stop a filibuster. So this is only the opening skirmish. Now, on the question about individual mandates, you know, individual mandates can make sense if, and it's a big if, the health coverage is affordable. Obviously,
right.
It doesn't make sense if it's not affordable. And I'm glad to say that both Senators Obama and Clinton have proposals that are designed to make health coverage much more affordable than we experience today.
Talking with Ron Pollack, Executive Director of Families USA, that's the Organization for Healthcare Consumers. And Ron, I attribute the origins of the state children's health insurance program, so-called SCHIP, to your organization. Can you tell us how that program evolved, and in particular, the role that Hillary Clinton played after her overarching effort to reform health care delivery failed in the early 1990s?
Well, first, let me say that this legislation was championed in the United States Senate by Senators Ted Kennedy and, believe it or not, Orrin Hatch.
Mm-hmm.
They were the two strange bedfellows who promoted this legislation. Now, the White House clearly was very supportive of this. You know, at the time this was being debated in 1997, the proposal by the Clintons to achieve health coverage for everybody had already gone down into defeat. And this legislation wound up being attached to an omnibus budget bill, and the Clinton White House was very supportive of it and was helpful. But the leadership in the Congress came from Senators Kennedy and Hatch.
Mm-hmm. And so, if I may, and I'm not trying to press you too hard because I know you want to maintain good relations with both campaigns, but would you say that the claims from the Clinton campaign of her role in SCHIP have been exaggerated?
I think that she clearly did play an important and helpful role in this legislation. Remember, Hillary Clinton has for a long, long time been a champion of the rights of children, and she certainly was very supportive of expanding coverage through this SCHIP program. I don't think that her claim about having played a very important and helpful role in getting SCHIP adopted is a false claim. I thought it was. I thought she did play a very helpful role, and clearly this would not have happened without the support of the White House.
Mm-hmm. And Ron Pollack, the current status of the Democratic attempts to override the president's veto, they've said that they will continue to bring the bill back up. Do you know when that is scheduled to occur again?
Well, they haven't scheduled something, but you know, one of the things, Peter, that I think people should take note of, people remark about this election that took place a little over a week ago for Denny Hastert's old seat, and Congressman Foster won that vote. And Congressman Foster actually made opposition by the Republicans of this children's health legislation a significant part of his campaign. And so I think it teaches a lesson to all of us, and certainly is a lesson not lost on the Democratic leadership in Congress, namely the vote that the Republicans made to uphold the president's veto is a very unpopular vote. And I have no doubt that we will see additional votes this year, but right now they have not yet been scheduled.
Ron Pollack, thank you for joining us today. Thanks for fighting for health care for all in this country.
Well, it's always good to talk to you, and thank you.
Ron Pollack, FamiliesUSA.org. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom Hartman, live from Washington, D.C.
Hartman Program.
Program. Tom Hartman. Where smart people get their news.
We continue on the Tom Hartman Program, live from Washington, D.C. at the Take Back America Conference. We're at the Omni Shoreham Hotel in the distinctive Adams Morgan section of the nation's capital. Lots of progressive activists gathering here. We have heard from Obama supporters and Clinton supporters, and it's fascinating just to hear the dialogue going on. Joining me now is Elizabeth Bagley, a senior advisor to Secretary of State Madeleine Albright in the late 90s, and she also served as the Clinton administration's early ambassador to Portugal. Ambassador Bagley, welcome to the program. Oh, I have to turn your microphone on. Wait a minute.
Am I on? Yes.
You are on now.
Really on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very dangerous to let the so-called talent control the equipment. You never know what will happen.
No.
Well, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And you're actively campaigning for Senator Clinton.
I am.
Yeah. And you have a background in foreign policy issues and that sort of thing.
But I also am involved with the Catholic outreach effort.
Okay. Well, one of the things I'd like to talk about that isn't really front and center in the debates is the Israel-Palestine problem and the lame effort so late in the Bush administration's second term, for legacy purposes apparently, to try to put together some sort of a peace process. Mm-hmm. And it's not working. And the American media is kind of playing it down. We get the blow-by-blow accounts of rockets from Gaza and Israeli retaliation.
Right.
But we're not really even discussing an American role, a significant one, in trying to broker peace between those parties.
No, and we haven't from the very beginning. I think Madeleine Albright used to call it ABC policy, anything but Clinton. I think from the very beginning, this administration has never had a comprehensive Middle East policy,
mm-hmm.
unlike President Clinton's. We came very close to getting a real defined settlement.
And that was not just legacy attempts.
I believe in the
final years of the Clinton administration, the president was personally involved.
Personally, very involved.
And put a lot of his own time and effort and prestige on the line.
Yeah, he did. Mm-hmm. He did, and this president has not done that. In fact, he's actually never even really laid the groundwork.
Mm-hmm.
When Colin Powell first went over there to Israel in the beginning, he was brought back because he literally could not make any kind of a deal or mm-hmm. negotiate at all. His administration didn't want him to do it. So it's been, they've really been... recalcitrant in doing any kind of outreach. I think Condi Rice has done some, but again, as you said, it's really too little, too late.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have built up some, common ground with the people and have been, be the honest broker that the United States, the role that the United States should play.
Well, and the impression I got from the president's most recent visit, it was called a peace tour, but it seemed mainly to try to build an alliance to attack Iran.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what people say. I don't know. That's hard to imagine that that could happen. But, yes, mm-hmm. that's what a lot of people are talking about. That
now, if you could describe Senator Clinton's positions on the Israel-Palestine conflict, what would she do?
Well, I think what she talked about is renewing what the relationship that her husband had. I think there should be a special envoy. I don't want to put words in her mouth because
mm-hmm.
I'm not really familiar with her Middle East policy per se.
Okay.
But I know that she is very interested in engaging in the Middle East. In Iraq, she just spoke on Iraq today and had a major speech on the fifth anniversary of our involvement in Iraq, and talked about having a regional stabilization group, which would include all the countries in the Middle East, including Iran and Syria,
mm-hmm.
to bring peace to to Iraq. So I think that certainly would be her first priority. But this is a whole package.
This
is Middle East is very volatile. The situation is volatile, and I think she would continue what her husband tried to do by bringing the sides together and being actively engaged in the effort of a peace process.
What do you make of her support for the Kyle Lieberman amendment? It was a resolution, non-binding, that passed last September, and it was the one that said the sense of the Senate is that the Iranian Revolutionary Guard is a terrorist organization. And that sentiment is not just idle. It was used by the Bush administration to declare the Quds Force, part of the Revolutionary Guard, as a terrorist group. And many people are concerned that this could be a pretext toward more aggressive action, including military assaults on Iran.
Well, that wasn't certainly her position. I mean, her position was like Dick Durbin's position, who is, as you know, the chief mentor for Barack Obama. It was also Barack Obama's position as well. He didn't happen to vote on that particular resolution. He didn't vote at all. But her position was that we have to be tough on Iran, and we have to have sanctions on Iran, and the only way to do that is to impose sanctions, is to direct that this be considered a terrorist organization.
Now, why is that?
Well, because you have to have, the State Department has to first declare them a terrorist organization in order to impose sanctions.
But this is that part of the military of a legitimate government.
This is a government that has had real major human rights abuses.
Okay. But you could say the same about the United States. Look at Gitmo and Abu Ghraib.
Yes,
and they do
can.
Say that.
Yes, you can.
And Iran, it may not mean anything, but Iran turned around and said that our CIA is a terrorist group.
Well,
where do you get with this kind of neener name calling?
I think what they really wanted to do, and I think they both made it quite clear, I know certainly Hillary and Dick Durbin did, this is not in any way to be considered an attack on Iran. It was basically saying that this, we have got to do something. We have to impose sanctions because we do not want to go to war. War is the last resort, and what we needed to do is impose sanctions so they would not to preclude Iran from doing what they're doing. I think they both were very clear that this was not the intent. The Bush administration, has decided to do whatever they want to do with Iran. I mean, obviously, they've probably, many factions of the government would like to go to war.
Now, Dick Cheney's on a peacekeeping mission there in the Middle East. He's in Baghdad today. I expect another bellicose speech against Iran, maybe from an aircraft carrier deck. He did that about a year ago.
Yeah.
And then
he's
going to go hold hands and play kissy face with King Abdullah and beg for lower oil prices and more supply. What do you think he's going to come back with? A T-shirt from the Green
Probably
Zone?
Probably nothing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have long ago decided not to think about what Dick Cheney has in mind. I think you're probably right. I think he certainly is among the people that is, tilting toward some kind of a bellicose stance on Iran, definitely.
We're talking with Elizabeth. I'm sorry, we're talking with Elizabeth Bagley. She served as ambassador to Portugal in the early 90s and was a senior advisor to Secretary of State Madeleine Albright in the late 90s. Tell me your thoughts about the potential for a global economic slowdown as Wall Street has hit some serious bumps. The phrase I used earlier is that when Wall Street sneezes, the world runs the risk of catching a major cold. Mm-hmm. And we saw the downturn in the markets, at least at the start of the day. The Nikkei was off. Hong Kong was down. And do you feel that the Bush administration has been moving in significant ways to shore up our sagging economy?
Well, I don't think I think part of the sagging economy is that they've not done enough to shore it up. And I think at this point, I mean, the bailing out of Bear Stearns is something that is highly unusual.
It sure is.
You know, and I think part of the problem is that they really haven't engaged again in our domestic issues as well. I mean, we have a huge deficit. China is now our banker.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a very difficult economic situation. The housing crisis, they really haven't addressed in a really comprehensive way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are real issues here. I mean, you know, you see him give a speech that acts like everything's fine, there's no recession, you know, surprised that the oil prices are up. Didn't know that. You know,
well, he doesn't build
amazing.
Those Suburbans.
No, that's right. He doesn't know.
And even the pickup trucks at the ranch.
I know. I know. No, he doesn't. I don't think he has a clue. It's very, very disturbing.
Yeah. So, final question. I've been very troubled by the attacks coming from the Clinton campaign in the last few weeks, particularly those intended to minimize the experience and the capabilities of Senator Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Any chance that's going to subside? I'm happy to hear Senator Clinton tout her experience and her views, and I think she makes a very strong case.
Mm-hmm.
But when they go negative, I think it hurts them.
I don't think she's tried to go negative. I think she wanted to make Barack Obama is making his position against the war, not his vote against the war. I think people sometimes think that he voted against the war, and I think she wanted to make it clear that mm-hmm. it was a speech against the war, not a vote.
Ambassador Bagley, thanks for joining us.
Thank
nice
you.
To talk with
Good
you.
To
From
here.
Washington, I'm Peter B. Collins.
Tom Hartman. Speaking the truth that multinational corporations don't want you to know. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We are back live in Washington, D.C. on the Tom Hartman Program, and I'm Peter B. Collins. The organized mayhem you hear in the background is what's called Radio Row at the Take Back America Conference. And decked out in a lovely shade of green here on St. Patrick's Day is the next congressional representative in the 4th District of Maryland, Donna Edwards. Donna, welcome.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Well, it's good to talk with you. I had a chance to talk with you by phone a couple of weeks ago after your big upset victory over Al Wynn. What was the margin there? Just repeat it to make us all feel good.
You know, I know it's really complicated, but it was 60 to 36.
Ow!
So it's so exciting because, obviously we thought we were going to win going right up until the till election day.
Right.
And then when the numbers started coming in, it was overwhelming. Every single precinct in the congressional district, I think 179 precincts.
Mm-hmm. How's it feel to be an overnight sensation?
Well, it feels great. It feels like we worked hard, that's for sure.
Now that you were supposed to say, well, Peter, it wasn't overnight. You've been at this for a long time, and perseverance pays off.
It does. You know, I ran in 2006 and came very short in a very controversial election in 2006, lost by about 2,700 votes. And it felt like a win. I'm telling you, in 2006, it really felt like a win because we had so much energy and excitement. And we just took that momentum, kept working with it, and really carried it right through 2008.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm familiar with some of your past from bios that I've read. And you kind of caused a pause in the audience today when you were giving a keynote speech. And you said that you used to work for Lockheed. And a kind of hush went through the room, and people were looking at each other. Lockheed? Donna Edwards worked for Lockheed? And, of course, you weren't building B-1 bombers or, you know, raping the taxpayers with cost-plus contracts. You worked at the Goddard Space Center. Is that right?
That's right. I was working on a project called Space Lab, and I was a systems engineer for that project. But part of the point in telling people that I worked for Lockheed, I think as progressives, we need to start actually looking around the country and in some places that are maybe not our comfort zones, because we have allies who are working for, you know, these major corporations all throughout our country, and they're out there hanging out in our congressional districts, and we need to organize them, mobilize them for real progressive change.
Yeah. Well, and you use that as a setup to deliver the line that getting out of Iraq doesn't take a rocket scientist.
That's exactly right. Getting out of Iraq is not rocket science. In fact, we already have a roadmap to get out of Iraq. There are a number of pieces of legislation that show us the way to do it using diplomatic channels, using channels of that we have in tools in national security, using the tools that we have for diplomacy and for peace that can get us out of Iraq.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Donna Edwards. She is the Democratic nominee, likely to win the election this fall in the 4th District of Maryland. And in my headsets, I think I just heard that Tom Hartman is on the line. Oh, okay. I just heard it in the background, but Tom has been in Darfur. He did his broadcast live from there on Friday. And Tom, come right on the air here. Tom Hartman, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, thank you. I'm calling you from a satellite phone here in Nairobi, Kenya. We've got about 5 minutes here, and then Ellen Ratner has to run off to her flight, and she's taking the satellite phone with her. We just got in from Lokochoki, Nairobi. I had not been talking much last Friday about exactly where we were, because it turns out that essentially all the places we were are places that are contested areas that are considered, at least by the government of Sudan, to be Darfur. And in fact, one town we were in yesterday, just 4 days ago, was evacuated because they were afraid that the militia was coming in. And we've just seen god-awful and horrific and amazing things, and I've got a lot of great stories to tell when I get back on the air Wednesday, and I just wanted to check in and let you all know that we're alive and well, and we're in Nairobi, and hopefully I'll be in Zurich, you know, 14 hours from now, and I'll be home at midnight Tuesday night, and I'll be on the air Wednesday morning.
All right. Well, Tom, we'll try to follow your progress on our screen here. And I'm glad to hear you check in, that you are well and safe. And have you had a chance to get a good shower?
We just had a decent meal. We just took a shower. We stopped at this hotel in Nairobi because we've been living in the bush for 3 days. We haven't had, a bathroom. We haven't had water. We haven't had electricity. I haven't washed my hair, and I've brushed my teeth, nothing in 3 days. And it was really nice taking a shower, I'll tell you. But our biggest concern, frankly, in fact, as we were leaving, we were seeing there was smoke on the horizon, maybe 15 miles away. Our biggest concern was that we were going to be attacked while we were there. And thank God that didn't happen. And we're in Nairobi now, and we'll be, back home soon. So,
Tom, just give us a quick anecdote, if you would. We've got about 1 minute. What really sticks with you from your visit to Darfur?
Well, for example, today there was some refugees who were coming back in from the Darfurian genocide, essentially. And this woman, Monica, is the commissioner, the elder of the community. And this old man showed up, and we were standing right there when this happened. There's 150 repatriated refugees who'd been gone for the 25-year civil war. And he showed up, and he starts telling her stories about her childhood. She starts sobbing. It turns out he's her father's brother, her uncle, her only living relative, and she didn't even know he was alive.
Wow.
He'd been living in the north as a slave. And it was just absolutely incredible.
Tom Hartman from Nairobi, Kenya. Have a safe trip home. He'll be back on the air Wednesday. Donna Edwards, thanks for joining us here.
Thank you. It's been good to be here. Thank you.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
I'm in Washington, D.C. on the Tom Hartman Program. We just heard from Tom by satellite phone out of Nairobi, Kenya. If you just joined us, Tom is at the airport. He flies to Zurich and then a long flight back to the United States. He expects to be back live with you on Wednesday. I'm Peter B. Collins here at the Take Back America Conference in Washington, D.C. I'll be with you today and again tomorrow. Joining me now is Christine Pelosi. She's got a new book out that is based on her experience training Democratic activists. It's called Campaign Boot Camp. Hello, Christine.
Hello, Peter B.
It's great to see you again. Could you please extend your hand? I want to inspect the bling. Christine got married recently. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
How's it feeling?
It feels great being Mrs. Peter Kaufman.
Oh, terrific. Well, let's talk. This is a kind of a boot camp area, or where you can recruit people for campaigns. Lots of activists from all over the country descend here to kind of get message, get inspiration. What do you think are the key components to getting people fired up and sustaining their enthusiasm all the way to November?
Well, the first thing is that we take a look at the fact that 30 million Americans have already voted for president in the Democratic primary. I mean, it's just phenomenal, the excitement and enthusiasm of Democrats, independents, and frustrated Republicans voting for change. It's very exciting. And our challenge as party leaders, I'm a member of the Democratic National Committee, so I take that.
We'll get to the superdelegate thing. Don't worry.
I know I have my cape here, too, so you can tell them I'm in costume. But our job as volunteers and as activists is to say, we're so excited that you've come out to vote. Now what we want to do is capture that enthusiasm, teach you the metrics of management, message, money, and mobilization, as I lay out in Campaign Boot Camp, and help people sustain networks. If you're a volunteer, one of the most exciting things is knowing that your service matters and is appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
So part of what's happening at this conference at Take Back America and what's happening across the country is that people are coming in to volunteer, and then they're growing volunteer networks so that they're mentoring each other, they're learning how to leverage the skills that they have in business and culture and philanthropy into political activism. So our job is to make sure that they're registered to vote, that they're registering their friends to vote, that they're part of an ethic, a culture of service, and that they are helping their friends get elected as delegates for Senator Obama or Senator Clinton to the national convention in Denver.
Yeah. Your mother, who happens to be the speaker and a ranking member of the Democratic Party, I think has been putting out some very important messages recently, trying to damp down the negative campaigning and the messages that are coming out that are really, I think, causing many people to recoil a little bit, harden their positions, and it could cause us real problems if we have a battle at the convention. And we have a split in the party with only 8 weeks after the convention going into November. What do you think we can do to try to get people to campaign in a positive way and avoid this kind of sniping? Because my concern is that these are kind of previews for Republican themes in the fall.
The most important thing that we can do is elect a Democratic president to lay out a vision of peace in the Middle East, bring our troops home, care for our veterans, invest in America, stop the concentration of power and wealth to the top 1% of the country, and preserve Social Security. If John McCain is elected president, we will have a war without end. We will have the continued unfair tax policies that tax work, not wealth. And if he had had his way before, we already have privatized Social Security. Can you imagine what Social Security would be like today if John McCain and George W. Bush had had their way and Social Security had been privatized? Wall Street would have made those invested your Social Security into Bear Stearns.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine that? We'd be bailing out Bear Stearns and our own Social Security if they had had their way. That's what America is faced with. We are faced with John McCain or a progressive vision for America, such as we're describing here at Take Back America, where we're talking about giving people the opportunity to fulfill their highest human potential, giving people the opportunity to go to college, to get into public service, to have health care, to have a clean environment, to have a solid economy. And what we're learning in the Democratic Party is we used to balkanize, we'd silo our issues, and now we're bringing everybody together because we understand that they're all related. If you want a healthy environment, invest in green jobs. Green jobs in turn mean that your jobs, these are jobs that cannot be outsourced, so they help our economy, they help our infrastructure, they provide people with good benefits so that they can take care of their families, particularly if a family member is sick, mm-hmm. and all of that takes the investment that we're spending in Iraq that we could be spending here at home and restoring our reputation in the world by having a responsible redeployment from Iraq and focusing on Afghanistan and focusing on protecting our country and not perpetuating a civil war over in the Middle East. So mm-hmm. those are the big issues. And if we focus on them, and if Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are listening, I would encourage each of you to show us your soul. Show us what you really care about. How are you going to lead this country in a new direction with a fresh display of competency, whether it's Katrina or Iraq? We want things to be done differently. I don't care about your Democratic opponent because I'm neutral, so it doesn't matter to me. What I care about is your Republican opponent. What I care about are the forces that are going to try to hold back, stem that progressive tide. You know what? It's the same forces that protected the president from having to sign legislation mm-hmm. that would have ended this war, and it's the same forces that encouraged George Bush to veto legislation. If he had signed the bill that the House of Representatives passed, most of our troops would be home by now.
Christine Pelosi with us here on the Tom Hartman program. Now, Christine, one of the things that really troubles me is that, and I'm just going to use this as an example, the comments by Geraldine Ferraro that she kept doubling down on. She would not back off. And the campaign apologized for her, but she still remains unapologetic. She's entitled to her point of view. And my issue is that these are themes, talking points, and ideas that will be used against us in the fall, regardless of who the candidate is, by questioning his experience, by introducing race themes. This kind of gives a green light to the Republicans to do even worse in their message machinery.
Well, what I tell people who are running for office is this. Remember, if they'll do it for you, they'll do it to you. So if somebody is willing to go out and attack for you, it also means that they're going to feel free to attack you. You set the standard. Your ethics and values set the standard and set the tone. So it's very important that both candidates for president and candidates at all levels of service understand that what they allow a surrogate to do is seen as a reflection on them. And we want to feel that we know our public officials, because every time the public trust is violated, we feel like, there we go again. We didn't look carefully enough. We didn't vet carefully enough. So that's why we listen to people's surrogates, because we think, well, maybe we're getting an insight into this person's character. So that's why surrogates are so important.
Okay, but I'm not going to vote for or against John McCain because of pastors that he has embraced, and I resent the way it's coming out of Fox News, being repeated by the other media. But we're seeing the Obama pastor, Reverend Wright, his comments, inflammatory as they were, are being used out of context and being used to fuel this kind of diversion. Because Hagee and Reverend White are not on the ballot. They're not part of these campaigns. It's
nobody's pastor is on the ballot. Nobody's pastor is on the ballot. Who is on the ballot are people of character, people who have records, people who have a vision and a plan, and that's what they have to get back to. You know, again, think about, what did we wake up to this morning? We woke up to news about the pastor and the bailout of Bear Stearns. What matters more? Bear Stearns. But of course they're not talking about that, because that would be inconvenient. That would be an inconvenient truth, as our Nobel Prize winning former Vice President Gore would say. So here's what I say. In campaign boot camp, I cite a thing that they use in the recovery movement. They say, if you're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, you're most likely to relapse. So H-A-L-T, halt. If you're hungry, get something to eat. If you're angry, calm down. If you're lonely, politically speaking, you know, call up a friend. Mm-hmm. Don't read the bad stuff they write about you on the blog. Just call your friends. If you're tired, get some sleep. Because if not, that's when you're going to make a mistake. And all of these candidates and all of these surrogates at all levels, particularly in the presidential, need to halt. Step back and say, I am an ambassador for my campaign. I tell people in every single boot camp that I do, whether it's candidates or causes, I say, you are an ambassador for your point of view. Mm-hmm. And people are going to look to you, your language, your presentation, your respectfulness of others. And that's going to impact your campaign. So what we all have to do is step back. Now, believe me, people say things about my mom all the time that are basically unprintable, but they get printed anyway. And some of them are very hateful, and some of them are very sexist. And they come from progressives who ordinarily don't see themselves as purveyors of hate speech and sexism.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? I can't get back online and go toe-to-toe, blog comment to blog comment. Right. I have to hold it in, reel it in, because I'm supposed to be better than that.
Well,
so
and
I
that's
understand.
One of the things where I think Barack Obama is really distinguishing himself. He is taking this heat very well. There have been a few minor missteps. He got off message. He was on the defensive over the NAFTA Canada thing. But by and large, I think that he has really held his own and shown great grace and strength under fire.
It is really an incredible self-discipline that is important. And again, I feel very confident that both Senator Obama and Senator Clinton would make excellent presidents. Vast improvement over George W. Bush.
Let's talk about your superdelegate status in a moment. But Pat has been on the line from New Mexico for about 4 days now. Pat, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. It's Peter B. Collins and Christine Pelosi live from Washington, D.C. Pat. Guys, can you pick up Pat, please? Going once. Okay, I guess we're not going to be able to talk to
Pat
right now. So, superdelegates,
yes.
What is your current position?
Well, my position, as stated a little before the California primary, is this, that I will vote for the person who wins the popular delegate count at the end of the process. So come June, when we have someone who has gone through the management of putting together a continental campaign, the message that attracts and inspires people, raise the money to be competitive and mobilize
to
win, I'll be voting for that person.
Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege.
We are live on the Tom Hartman program at the Radio Row Take Back America Conference in Washington, D.C. This place is buzzing. Lots of people from all over the country have gathered here. Simon Rosenberg joins me now. He's founder of the New Democrat Network. Now, shouldn't that be Democratic? I thought Democrat was the way that Tom DeLay talked about us to, you know, trivialize and marginalize
well,
us.
Well, our name really is now just NDN. I mean, we're a think tank. We're a C4, so we had to
we had to take the name Democrat out of our name, so we're just NDN, sort of like KFC or IBM, and but still with a lot of passion and fight in us.
Yeah. And where are you in the campaign this year? Are you neutral?
Which is getting an increasingly hard place to be.
It is.
I have, you know, I used to work for the Clintons, and I also admire Barack Obama greatly. And so, you know, it's, I don't think any of us believed we'd be in the middle of March still here in the middle of the race, but it's here we are. And,
well, it really seemed like both campaigns expected this to be settled on Super Tuesday or shortly thereafter, so mid-March. And, gosh, kind of like the way Bush went into Iraq, I'm not sure these campaigns have detailed plans for the rest of the campaigns.
And I think it's, you know, and they both, you know, this is you know, this is a problem of strength and not weakness. I mean, both of these candidates have run extraordinary campaigns. They've gotten a tremendous amount of support, unprecedented amount of volunteers and people voting and giving money. It's really, you're seeing really a revival, I think, of citizen involvement in politics through this election. It's been very exciting, and certainly... Mm-hmm. It's the legacy of Howard Dean and Joe Trippi back in 2003. Now that we've seen 4 or 5 years later into that process, we really are, the Democrats are becoming a people-based party. It's exciting. But I think, you know, my quick take is that I think Senator, you know, the next few weeks could be a dangerous time for Senator Clinton, because I think there is a growing awareness among a lot of people who finally figured out this crazy system. I think it was very confusing. That Barack is really in a very much stronger position to win the nomination than she is. He's raised, he's gotten more votes. He has more delegates. He's won twice as many states. He's, you know, had, he's got a superior organization. He's raised much more money. And I think there's going to be this sense of, you know, how does she win this thing? I mean, what's her roadmap for victory? And I think there's going to be a new scrutiny on her strategy about how she's going to win. So I think this 5 week lull is actually going to let everybody take a deep breath and look at the race. But I think it is amazing.
But it's also creating this media environment where, because we're not focused on next Tuesday's primary, we're hearing Reverend Wright and a lot of sniping and the Geraldine Ferraro flap. Yep. And I, you know, I take people back to 1988. And we know how Willie Horton played a role in the defeat of Michael Dukakis.
Yep.
And many people don't remember where Willie Horton came from.
Yep.
It came from the Al Gore campaign in the primary. And it's one of these, it's like a cluster bomblet that will lie there, and then somebody's going to step on it this fall. And I think the 3 a.m. TV spot, the saying that McCain and I are qualified but not Barack Obama, and the Ferraro escapade, the Billy Shaheen problem, that's pretty much behind us now. But these are part of a pattern, in my view, that really suggests that the Clinton campaign will not accept a defeat gracefully and may go out swinging in a manner that bloodies up Barack Obama and makes it more difficult for him to win in the fall.
Well, certainly there's a plausible argument that the only way that Hillary can win now is if she has to kill Obama.
Well, she has to drive up his negatives to her level.
Well, but I don't even know. I think the only way she wins is if she gets him out of the race. I mean, I think that there's just the way the delegate math works, is that his lead is almost insurmountable unless literally he collapses, and that I don't think she can win through conventional means. And I think that reality is going to start to become better understood, putting a lot of pressure on Senator Clinton that if she's going to stay in the race, what is the path that she has to win? And will she be putting all of us through what will be 3 months? Is it going to be worth it at the end?
Yeah.
And I think there's going to be a greater burden on her in the next couple of weeks to really demonstrate how it is she's going to win this thing. Because I think you're right. I think this thing, look, 2 weeks ago everybody was enthusiastic, excited, amazed at our field. Now you can feel just the fear, the trepidation, the anguish, the anxiety to move on and get this thing done, and I certainly feel that way.
And Simon Rosenberg, I decided to support Obama back in December, and yet I have to say that the two one-on-one debates that I saw, Hollywood and Texas, showed me things about both candidates and left me feeling, you know, I could be okay if Hillary Clinton becomes president. I have problems with her 2002 vote and the way she is describing her experience and her record. But the positions that she has taken currently about health care, about getting us out of Iraq, about strengthening our positive foreign policy around the world, I think that she articulates those messages very well. And if she would stand on those instead of either participating in or permitting the kind of attacks that have occurred from her campaign in the last few weeks, I think the party would be better off, and she would have a better chance of coming out of this maybe with an offer of the vice presidency.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you. I think Hillary, I think both of them have been great candidates, and I'm very proud of both of them. And I think they've run extraordinary races under extraordinary circumstances, a long, long campaign with unprecedented amounts of money, unprecedented number of debates, so the opportunities for screwing up were greater than ever, and they all come through this very strong. But I do think that this question about how race has played out in this campaign, having been part of the war room in 1992, having been in New Hampshire as the communications director for Clinton in 1992, I do think the Clintons, I think they miscalibrated a little bit, and that there really is in America today a growing intolerance of intolerance. I think that, you know, that you can't have it both ways anymore. And I think it used to be in an old racial construct in America where only 10 or 11% was minority. Now we're 33% minority. I think our relation to race has changed, and I don't know that the Clintons were totally of the time on that in the last few weeks.
Simon Rosenberg, thanks for joining us today. Always great to see you.
No problem. Thank you,
Peter. What's your website?
NDN.org.
NDN.org.
Yep.
I'm Peter B. Collins. Enjoyed sitting in for Tom today. I'll be back at you tomorrow, live from Take Back America in Washington, D.C. Tom Hartman returns Wednesday here on Air America Radio. Once again, I'm Peter B. Collins. Thanks for listening.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit TomHartmanRadio.com.